You'll see if I can do this. I'm chairman of the Oral History Project for the Women's Overseas Service League. I'm here in Milwaukee on this slightly overcast day, the 13th of May, 1983, to help the unit celebrate their 60th anniversary. But first, this morning, we're going to get the story of one of their members, Hilda Abbott, who is about 86 years old, and who served in World War I as a Hello Girl. The Hello Women were women that were specially recruited to go over to France and work on the telephone switchboards. According to Hilda, they had about she had about a 2 weeks training in a special school in
San Francisco.
And after her training, then she was sent overseas. Hilda, what was the branch of service called that you were asked to serve in?
Our address was the U.S. Signal Corps, and we were subject to the rules and regulations that the Signal Corps set up for us. The Signal Corps had taken hotels in various cities of France where the action was. And they had sent for hostesses to see that we were comfortable and that we got in on time. Our first hostess was Elizabeth Fox, who had been Dean of Women at the University of Oregon. And she was young and very pliable. She we all were very glad to have her there. And she made a home for us. And this was tour, and we had the Signal Corps had taken over a small hotel, and I was there 6 months, and during that time it was home. We had people walking in, boys, homesick boys would come in and sit down and play the piano and make themselves at home.
This was in the hotel?
In the hotel. They were so glad to see American girls.
This was in Paris?
Well, each hotel they took over had a YWCA hostess, and those that I met were fun and very good with girls, and made us want to adhere to the rules of the house.
How long were you there?
Also, I was in tour 6 months, and the Second Aviation Instruction Center of the United States was located in tour, and all of these young men uh, gave dances and had us up for dinner, and also we had them, and
it's okay. Don't feel tense about it. Just like 6 months of touring, and I went depressed.
We girls very often made candy and took it to the hospitals because the French people didn't have any sugar, and those boys appreciated it. There were French boys and American boys in the hospital, and we wrote letters home for the American boys and did all the things that the nurses didn't have time to do, and took flowers over there and just sat and talked to them on our days off, which were not often enough, really.
Did you work a certain number of hours each day?
We worked 8 hours a day and had one day off a week, and that was usually the day that we saved for the hospital.
I'm going to leave it on. When you worked at the switchboard, did you have some interesting experiences?
Yes, we did. When we worked at the switchboard, we were told not to discuss anything we heard on the line. On the telephone, we were at the headquarters of the Service of Supplies, so we always knew when there was a good push coming, because the we'd have to call the from munitions and for doctors and hospitals and railroads. And they did all of the planning from tour. The heads of all those departments were stationed there.
We've forgotten to talk about what the qualifications were for you to go over there. But you're speaking French?
Oh, and the reason we American girls were over there was that the French telephones were not up to the American telephones, so the Americans put in their own system, and there were times when we had to deal with the French operators to get out of the way places, and so the boys who were running the telephones weren't up to it, and we also were asked to interpret. When an officer was going to speak to a Frenchman and wasn't sure whether the Frenchman spoke English or not because he didn't speak French. And so they'd call ahead of time and ask us to stay on the line.
Did you ever have any problems? I mean, did you, you know, have arguments with the operators?
Well, we were also told to report anything unusual. So one day I listened in to a conversation which went something like this: 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 6, 8, and so on. And I assumed it was a code and that I had better notify the headquarters. So later I saw the man who took the call, and he said it was somebody giving out, it was the Railroad Transportation Office giving out the numbers of the cars. But for a while I felt very pleased that I'd been instrumental in catching a spy.
How much were you paid? Do you remember anything about your pay?
$60 a month. And
did that include your food? Your meals?
That included our meals. Mm-hmm. And I think that those are the that was the only expense that we had to pay for. We were there very little for meals because there were so many men and they all wanted to take us out for dinner. And we always went in pairs. My roommate and I never went anywhere without the other one. So it made it very comfortable because we didn't know these boys. And the reason we got to know them was that two Boston women had opened an officers' club in a home in Tour. It was a large house and a lovely garden. And there was dancing there every night. And these Miss the women chaperoned us. It sounds silly in this day and age, but in those days we were pretty well chaperoned even at home. So and it worked out very well because they were very alert to see that everybody had a good time and that we met all of the officers, and they made it very comfortable for us. And
what kind of uniform were you wearing at that time?
We had blue serge suits, dark blue, with the Signal Corps insignia on the collars, and we wore white blouses under it.
Did you have any rank, you know?
Yes, we had a chief operator each city where we were stationed had its own chief operator, and she was the boss of the office.
And what kind of an insignia was that then that you wore to indicate your rank? Stripes or?
No, the stripes came for years of service, or every 6 months you got a stripe for service. And oh yes, there was the chief operator had an emblem with a telephone on it.
Would this have been included in the ranks of officers or enlisted?
Officers. I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Were you given pretty good care? Did you have good medical care?
I don't know. We were a pretty healthy group, but from my own experience, I had an attack of flu at the time when it was so prevalent and so deadly, and I was unconscious for 2 days in the hotel, and my roommate kept trying to get a doctor, but the boys all had it too and were in the hospital. In fact, they were later, when we were stationed in Brest, the boats would come in laden with stretchers, and the boys were taken to the hospital, which was next to our quarters, and some of them died on the way, a good many of them, and that was gruesome, but they hadn't expected so much sickness, and there just weren't enough doctors.
Did any of the women die
no.
from it? They didn't.
No.
They're a pretty hardy group.
In fact, I'm the only one who was unconscious. I guess some of them had a slight bit. In fact, my roommate and I slept in the same bed, a big double bed, and she never got it. So, well, all I can tell you about a tour is that it's a delightful place to be, and on our days off after we had been to the hospital, we'd take a little lunch and go off on the river and use our big rain capes for sails, and we'd sail down until we found a nice grassy slope with a tree, and we'd go out under the tree and have our lunch, and usually we'd have somebody who wanted to read something to us. We'd have people who wanted to paint. These were men and women, and really relaxed on our days off.
You rented these boats, did you?
Yes,
sailboats?
Yes.
Made from sailboats?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any trouble getting food?
No.
American food?
Well, if we wanted to and if we knew in time, we'd take something from our kitchen. Whatever we were having for dessert that day, for instance. And the boys would get sandwiches probably at their camp. We had always had too much food.
Did you, were you ever close to the front lines there in France?
No, but we did have offices near the front line up in Chaumont. And they, well, could hear the guns and so on. And then in Paris, when Big Bertha was shooting at Paris, the Signal Corps girls who were stationed there went to work every morning with their suitcases packed, and behind them at the switchboard, ready to evacuate any minute. But they never had to. The other girls up near the line did eventually evacuate because things were getting too hot.
But there was no sign of evidence of the war in Tours or in Brest?
No.
Destruction?
No. No.
Where were you when the armistice was signed?
I was in Brest. And that we knew ahead of time that it was going to be signed, and that's one of the things that we couldn't talk about. We never mentioned it even to each other. We were terribly discreet. Well, they had a false armistice, and we went through that way. And then when the armistice was actually signed, we were still on our guard and couldn't tell. Well, there were other things.
Did you participate in the excitement? I mean, in the celebration?
Oh yes. We went out that evening, and everybody was forming circles and getting us inside the circle and saying that we'd have to kiss every one of them before they'd let us out. However, we didn't, and so they did the kissing. my mother was with the Rockefeller Institute, and she arrived in Paris the day of the armistice, and she was just overcome. She had been born in Paris and grew up there, so it was a double thrill. But I didn't even know that she had come over.
Was there much difficulty in getting letters through? Did you have trouble corresponding with your family?
No. They went right. They were, what do they call it?
Censored.
But
get away from your mom.
They all went through.
Had you been told that you couldn't write certain things? Or where you were?
No.
They knew you were in Tours?
No, they knew I was in Tours. But the girls who were in the other places, more strategic places, were not allowed to tell where they were.
How many of the telephone operators were there? Do you remember, or did you know?
Yes, I used to know. Let me turn it off. I think there were About 240. It sounds dead.
Okay. What did you do after the armistice was signed?
Well, of course, the offices were closing for the Americans, and there was lots of work to be done to get things cleared out. The railroad transportation department was very busy, and then I was stationed in Brest, and they were busy there getting boats to take the boys home, and
just not so close.
Oh, the
were you still with the Signal Corps then?
Yes, I was with the Signal Corps, and when I left Brest, when we were through there, I went to Paris, and the Peace Commission had headquarters at the Hotel Crillon, and they had had a big switchboard there, manned by the Signal Corps girls, and they took over the work of the Peace Commission, and that was very interesting when we had time to listen in, because they were in telephone correspondence with the not Fontainebleau, what's it? With the Peace Commission in Versailles. It doesn't sound.
Yeah, it's going.
Okay. And so it was our first experience with anything like a television set. We had everything described to the people at the Crillon who were meeting there, and especially the reporters. And it made us feel that we were right there too.
How long did you stay with the Peace Commission?
Until they left.
That was when?
I couldn't tell you.
What was it, in 1920?
Yes.
It was January 1920, you said you came back.
That would be it.
What did you do after you came back to the United States, or did you meet, let me ask you this before, you mentioned a little while ago that you met your husband in France. Can you tell me about that?
Well, that, my, a friend from California looked me up in Brest, and he was on his way home, and he wanted me to have dinner with him. And I said that my mother was with me. She had come to spend Christmas with me. And he said, fine, I'll get an extra man. And it turned out that the extra man was the man I married. And he left the next day. They both men went home, and I didn't come along for about 4 months later. So.
When you got back to the United States, did you marry the man? That's where you say not right away.
Not right away.
What did you do?
I went back to college because I thought I should finish, which I did. And then I went to New York and had a job there and was with them, living in a settlement house and doing volunteer work there, besides being secretary to Dr. Haven Emerson, who had been in tour at the time I was there, but I had never met him.
And what was he doing? Was he?
He was with Columbia College in Dr. Emerson was in public health at Columbia University, and he went all over the United States, really, giving lectures on public health. And I was with him. I was with him about 8 months, and then I went home to be married.
Did you have any children in this marriage?
Yes, I had a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. And my boy was in the next war. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, he wasn't sent over, so he was here.
And you have grandchildren?
And I have 7 grandchildren.
Oh, that's great. Do you get a chance to see them at all?
Oh, yes. They come and visit me. I have 3 who live in Ohio, and they come up and see me at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter's 4 children are not far away. They're about 40 miles away, and they come in and I go out there, so we're in close touch.
You live in a lovely condominium here looking out over the Lake Michigan.
Yes, isn't it pretty? 15 years.
15 years.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
I think that's
And
great.
I love it.
You drive your own car?
Yes.
Well, then you're not housebound, are you?
Not at all.
You
want
to.
No.
Have you had a chance to go back to France at all?
Yes. Mother and I. Oh, my son, when he graduated from college, went to France and got a job as an English teacher in Nîmes and at the normal school in Nîmes. So mother and I thought we'd go over and take him around when school closed, which we did, and we did a lot in Paris, and then went to Italy, and then came home.
Mm-hmm. I know that WSL had a convention in Paris. Were you in the organization then?
No.
You weren't?
No.
That was too bad, because you could have really shown them around, couldn't you? When did you come into the Women's Overseas Service, do you remember?
No, I don't. I'll tell you, I was in this, are we off? Let's just...
Hilda, you mentioned that you had some interesting experiences in the places which you lived. What was the story about the hotel that had been a converted body house?
Oh, that. We had a sentinel station at the door all night, every night. And we got to know him pretty well, just expected to see him there, thought nothing of it. But one night I woke up and there was a big altercation going on outside of my window down at the front door. And it seems that the house we were living in had been a body house, and that's why we were so well taken care of with the sentry. And the sentry wouldn't let the man in, the Frenchman in, and the Frenchman didn't speak English, and the sentry didn't speak French. And they were out there arguing, it seemed to me, for hours. But you never did get in.
was your, in this picture that I'm seeing here, your mother is in the picture, and yet it's titled at the top of it, Women's Overseas League. That was the beginning of the Overseas Service League, was it?
Yes.
And all these women in this picture are all in uniform.
Yes.
What were the uniforms?
Oh, everything. Red Cross, what are the blue, well, Signal Corps, of course, and
the Salvation Army?
No. I'll turn it off a second. And the YWCA, they not only sent entertainers over, but our hostesses that I mentioned before were YWCA people.
And in Red Cross?
My mother went over with the Red Cross. She had been, she had had a shop in San Francisco, a volunteer thing, to sell articles made by the French soldiers in the hospitals and widows and orphans and so on. And she was a French woman, and of course welcomed the chance to go to France. And so the Red Cross sent her over. And when she got to England, Rockefeller Institute asked her to head an organization to eliminate. Tuberculosis among the children. They were having a terrible epidemic of it. So she was put at the head of a traveling show. They had a big truck and they carried their own movies and had speakers and they had a doctor and they had two women who were writers and good speakers, and my mother headed it. She had to go and make arrangements in these small towns to have a hall where they could meet and to meet the mayor and all the city officials who cooperated in the effort to get a crowd there.
Now, this was before we had the inoculation for TB, wasn't it?
Yes.
So this was just health care.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To teach them to sleep with their windows open, for one thing. And also, they established, the Rockefeller Institute established milk stations so that they would get free milk for their children.
This was the aftermath of World War I in France, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Sure.
So she went all over with this thing. They had two trucks, as a matter of fact, but because they all rode in the trucks, excepting mother, very often took a train to get there early and make arrangements. She'd get there a day early, having written a week earlier. So she did all of that.
I don't remember reading anything about this. I mean, here again, America was helping.
It had nothing to do with the war.
No.
But
this did make her eligible for Women's Overseas Service League, didn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she must have been in one of the early units in San Francisco?
Yes. Mm-hmm. She was registered as a Red Cross worker.
When she came back to Milwaukee with you, then she joined the Milwaukee unit?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was very nice. Everybody spoiled her.
Yeah. Two of you could share that experience.
Yes.
Well, that's great. I think, I'm sure that from the conversations that we've had between interviews here, there have been so many things you've told me that should be on this tape. But I know that I've taken a lot of your time now, and we really have only done not even a, well, yes, we've done. We've got pretty close to three quarters of a tape.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate
I think
your
we've
time.
Hit the high spots.
I think we have. And I want to thank you very much, Hilda, for the time you've given us, because this is really important.
Well, I'm so glad to do it, but I'm sorry you didn't come 20 years earlier.
One thing that you have not mentioned, and that is that in April, the 30th of April in 1980, the Army finally came to its senses and did give you, made an award to you that made you an actual veteran. So if you had needed it or do need it, you should have the veteran's benefits. Unfortunately, all of the many women who served with you, at least a great many of those people are now gone. Many of them are in nursing homes or being cared for. And it's just too bad that it took so long for the Army to remember, I noticed in these remarks that were made here that it said it was something like 60 years between the time of your service and the time that they finally grant you the title of having of being a veteran. And I think that it's great that at least they did finally give you the credit that you well deserved. Thank you.